Now back to Good Morning New Hampshire with Peter St. James and Pat Kelly on 107.7 The Pulse.
8:14 is the time. Man, I had to work at this intro.
Okay.
I really earned my salary today. Okay. Now let's go back to 1965.
Okay.
You know the theme song from this show.
Just sit right back and you'll hear a tale of a faithful trip that started from.
Okay. Do you know who's singing it?
Yes.
Who?
The Wellingtons.
Very good.
Huh?
Very good. No, that's great. Okay, so the Wellingtons sang the intro to Gilligan's Island. But did you also know that the Wellingtons were featured in one episode of Gilligan's Island?
No!
Aha. And they were known, they each had a name.
Were they the fake Beatles-type group?
You getting there?
Oh God!
They were
what was their name?
Bingo, Bango, Bongo, and Irving.
Yes, Bingo, Bango, Bongo, and Irving. Oh my God, I remember that.
But the name of the band that appeared that were actually the Wellingtons, but they appeared. They were going for some rest and relaxation. Ended up on Gilligan's Island.
Well, yeah, of course they did. Of course they did.
The band was called the Mosquitoes, and the song was "Don't Bug Me."
Oh, my God. And, of course, Marianne and Ginger were like,
ah! Yeah.
Oh, even Lovie.
And so was Gilligan.
Even Lovie. Of course Gilligan was.
Yeah.
Oh, that's so funny.
Don't Bug Me
Bingo,
by the Mosquitoes.
Bingo, Bongo, and Irving.
There you go.
I just heard Marianne.
Man, I was killing myself for you, Perry. I hope you appreciate this.
That's impressive.
Thank you.
Because I watched Gilligan's Island, and I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Oh, I remember.
It was an episode from December 1965.
Wow.
Yep. Mosquitoes, Don't Bug Me.
Yeah.
That was good work. That's impressive.
It is. All right.
It's all about the research. Yeah. You know that.
That's right.
It is our pleasure to welcome back the state entomologist, Pierre Siegert, a.k.a. the Bug Chick, who we just love having you on, and it's been way too long. And every time I see a tick out there, I'm going, damn, I got to talk to Pyrrha.
Yeah, I know.
Yep. No, it has been too long. And I'm glad to hear both of you guys. This is a time where it's nice to hear from people you enjoy spending time with.
Well, thank you so much.
No, we appreciate
that. Thank you so
that.
Much.
Appreciate that. We love having you on. We're trying to keep
some semblance of normalcy here somehow, some way.
It's too easy to get caught up in the whole hysteria, and we're not doing that. We're still doing the regular thing and still talking COVID-19, but, you know, life goes on other than that, too. So we're trying to keep the focus on that. So what are you occupying your time with now?
Situation in that some of the work that we do really doesn't involve too much face-to-face interaction with people. And so that is continuing full steam ahead. We've got basically two main activities that we do this time of year, and all of them, and really the focus of what my division usually does, is about reducing pests that can impact plant health. And particularly, we look for pests which are not known to be widely distributed in the state, in the region, in the country. And we do that because the earlier you find them, the better your mitigation works, the cheaper the cost of the mitigation. And so we focus on inspections. Mostly of nursery stock, and survey, which is where we go out with traps or look at various trees for specific pests. And all of that survey work really can be done individually without too much face-to-face interaction. And so we're really putting a focus right now on survey efforts as well as high-priority inspections, you know, trying to get the inspections done that will yield the most benefit.
Now we talk about Asian longhorn beetle, the emerald ash borer, and people rightly or wrongly will lump the tick in, you know, wood ticks in with that. And we've got the woolly, whatever it is.
Adelgid.
Yeah, the woolly bugger, whatever the thing is.
The hemlock woolly adelgid. Yep.
Yeah, okay. Do we have, you talk about mitigation. Do we have success stories where we've seen bugs here and managed to keep them from coming to the state, or do we find that they're here and we really can't get them to go away, so we work on containment?
What a question for 8:15 in the morning. Yeah,
hey, I've been here since 5. I don't want to hear it, Pira.
All right, play. Put the mosquitoes back on. No.
So let me start with what I consider to be a good success story, although okay. Your listeners may not think about it that way just because of where we are locally. And I'm going to talk a little bit about gypsy moth. And, of course, gypsy moth has been a huge problem in the Northeast for over 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
It feeds on a wide range of trees. It causes a lot of devastation. But the interesting thing about gypsy moth was no matter how quickly it spread here in the Northeast, it really hasn't made it very far west yet. And that's a combination of trying to slow the spread, which is a term I really associate mostly with gypsy moth, and by doing mitigation in some of those areas where it hasn't penetrated yet. So we've got some pests here in the Northeast that are very standard pests for us, Japanese beetle, gypsy moth, things like that, which are just nightmares for people in the western states. They don't want to see Japanese beetle show up. They don't want to see gypsy moth show up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the fact that they haven't made it out that far yet is actually a testament to how things can work with biocontrol, with chemical control, and with various regulatory actions to try to keep things from spreading. Now, what hasn't spread here yet? Well, we are lucky in that we're cold, so there are a lot of pests that we don't worry about getting established here in the Northeast because they won't survive the winters. So when we're thinking about pests that we're looking for in survey, we don't spend too much time thinking about the pests that would better establish in a different climate because they wouldn't establish up here anyway.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got about 39 pests that we're looking for this summer in orchard settings, in vegetable production, and forested settings and nurseries that are not well established in this state, but could cause some damage. So I think that was a long walk around that we just did there. It's a little hard to answer what isn't established here because we haven't established it.
So, okay.
Does that make sense?
No, I get, and I understand that. But we always talk about the preventive stuff, and I'm saying, I was just wondering, do we have a success story? You know, and so you kind of explained that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yep.
Now for gardening. People, you know, because of the shutter at home thing, a lot of people saying, hey, this is the year I'm going to start a garden and blah, blah, blah. So we've got potato beetles and hornworms and cucumber beetles. And are those like annoying pests? But I mean, they're not big problems.
Big problems. If you are interested in producing fruit and vegetables, I would say the potato beetle is one that I fight with every year in my home garden, especially on my tomatillas. They really love those. But those are the other thing that's interesting to me is that our like nuisance pests and pests that we spend a lot of time right now trying to control were yesterday's invasive pests.
No, okay.
And so all of the ones that you just mentioned were really kind of the invasive pests of yesteryear to look out for. So yes, those can cause some economic damage. They can you'd need to be on top of them when you're out in your garden. And I would say that cooperative extension really that's where cooperative extension fits into with what we do. So your extension staff is going to be offering guidance and support on our everyday pests that we're dealing with on a regular basis, whereas where my staff comes in with are the pests that are not known to be established as the early warning. So that's where we kind of overlap and work very well together with cooperative extension.
I want to throw you some props because you're the only other person I know that raises tomatillo. I've done it. I've got it in the greenhouse. I don't have a lot of them, but if you're making salsa, it's primo ingredient.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, it is. I love the tomatillas.
And the first time I raised them, I'm going, what is this little paper thing? And then you take the paper off and there's the tomatillo, but you grind it up into the salsa.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's supposed to be.
Mm-hmm.
Cilantro and jalapeno and some
tomatillo. Yeah.
Oh, now you're talking.
See, that's what, and there are people that are saying, I want to do that with gardening. And welcome to the party, but get ready. Some people pick the potato beetles off by hand. You got to spend a lot of time looking on the under part of the leaves for the orange eggs. It can be very time intensive.
It can. My daughter has helped me with that. Now that she's a little bit older, she's a little bit less inclined to want to go and do that. And I was very lucky for a number of years. A little girl next door loved to come over and help me pick the beetles. So,
oh, that's cool.
And the eggs.
So was it a – it doesn't really matter what kind of winter it was for Asian longhorn beetles or emerald ash borers. They were under the bark and they were in the tree. They really don't care?
Yes, certainly, especially for emerald ash borer, they don't care. Asian longhorn beetle, too, I think is probably pretty well protected because it is feeding deep within the tree, and the tree has some thermally, insulating properties that protect mm-hmm. it from the cold temperature of the winter. I would say that there is some thought that maybe emerald ash borer is a slightly more robust insect. If you just look at how it's spread. It spreads so quickly across the country, across a variety of climatic conditions, and it really has one host plant that it goes after. And a host plant that can be densely packed in some areas, but mm-hmm. is not as widespread as other host plants. Whereas Asian longhorn beetle utilizes a variety of host plants. It actually was introduced into the country multiple times, and it really hasn't spread the way emerald ash borer has spread. And so there may be something there about it just not being quite as sturdy of an insect. Not mm-hmm. to say that it's not a threat, because if it gets into the maples, it's a really big risk for New Hampshire in particular.
Ooh, yeah.
But there's a, it's just the two beetles are not exactly the same in terms of their potential for reproduction and establishment.
Depending on what tack the COVID-19 takes over the next couple of months, will you and the state start pushing the firewood ban and promoting it again to keep these invasives out of the state from coming in through via people's firewood?
Stops pushing that or promoting the use of locally sourced firewood is the other way to say that. It's still in place. We'll certainly be running again some more outreach about that as we get into the warmer months. Mm-hmm. We have delayed some of those activities, mostly because we do a lot of expos and things which were canceled. But those activities are continuing. There's not been a stop on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, I don't think people have been paying. If you've been running it, I don't think people are listening,
Well, it's
right.
There's
a lot of bandwidth right now that's going to a lot of people.
Yeah. Yep, sad but true.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's and some people, some of your colleagues that deal with ticks are saying, oh, my God, it's going to be a long, tough year. They're all long, tough years.
Yeah.
I've been out working on firewood, and I'd go 2 or 3 weeks, and nothing. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, bang, I got three. It's like, where'd you come from?
Mm-hmm.
Right. We were waiting.
Yeah, I know. So the ticks, they're there. And because of the winter, I mean, we had in certain parts of the state, no snow,
mm-hmm.
In January. And I talked to a vet or a couple of vets that said, oh yeah, we're pulling dogs in and pulling ticks off them. And Lyme disease is still just going along.
Yeah, and we've started, we get some submissions of ticks to the Division for Identification. That's really all we do is identify what species of tick it is. We don't have any ability to run any ELISA tests or anything like that. We're not that kind of scientist. But we get periodic submissions of ticks from people throughout the year, and certainly I would say the last couple of weeks it's starting to pick up again. We certainly have gotten some already. So they're out there.
Are they still, okay, and I'm not an entomologist, so are they still the mm-hmm. run-of-the-mill ticks, or are we seeing something that hasn't been seen in the state yet?
No, we're still seeing, mostly the submissions that we get are the black-legged tick or the deer tick,
mm-hmm.
And then we get occasionally the American dog tick. I think people in New Hampshire are getting really savvy as to the difference between those two ticks. So mostly what we get now are the black-legged tick.
Mm-hmm.
But on occasion, we'll see something else. We might get a Lone Star tick every once in a while. They're really not known to be established in New Hampshire. But, people might travel and pick one up, and then we'll get one. But I think maybe we get one of those once a year. You know, it's really not very frequent. I would say most of what we're getting is black-legged tick when people are submitting.
And the Lone Star ticks, that you can easily recognize those big cowboy hats on. So.
Yeah. Well, they do. right, exactly. And they've got extra spurs on their legs.
would they be a problem if they got established in the state?
You have something new that's established in the state that is interacting directly with your blood supply, it's probably a problem.
Yeah. Invasive.
But the good thing is that the mitigation that you do as a person would be pretty consistent. So you're probably not going to treat the Lone Star tick differently than what you're already doing for the black-legged tick.
Oh, God, no.
You know, you're still going to be doing tick checks. You're still going to be removing ticks. You're still going to be using repellent, thinking about, managing how your yard is set up, doing the thing with the dryer, with the clothes after you come inside. All of those things you're still going to be doing.
Yep, doing that. Putting your pants in your socks, making sure you're wearing long sleeves.
See, I'm paranoid. Right. I'm paranoid that I'm going to beat COVID-19, but I'm going to get Lyme. You know? It's like, oh, geez. Oh, man.
It's not one thing, it's another.
Well, it really is. But anyway. So is this a busy time of year for an entomologist?
This is the busiest time of year for us. I mean, maybe not April 14th is not necessarily the busiest time, but we're really getting into our very, very busy season because if our focus for a lot of what we want to do is survey and inspection, you're going to be ramping that up at the same time that the insect populations are kind of coming out of their overwintering stage and are then more apparent to be detected on the landscape. And so really our busiest months are from April through October.
Oh, wow.
And so we are just running full bore through that entire time, getting our inspections in, getting our surveys done, responding to introductions that could be a problem. And then I don't want to say that things slow down between October and April, but the focus shifts. And it allows us to kind of catch up a little bit on some of the other things that we have to delay during our busiest season.
Wow. How much input do you get from the public, people sending you samples of stuff or sending you pictures of, holes in trees going, is this one of them? I mean, do you get a lot of public input?
We do. It comes in cycles. The NHBugs website and the Facebook page have been really dramatic in kind of, focusing our effort on those things. Until we created the NHBugs page, when people had a picture of an insect or holes or damage that they thought that they might be seeing out there, they would send it often to about six different people in the state simultaneously.
Oh.
And so all of us were simultaneously responding with the same information to the same person, which was a little bit reiterative and not a great use of our time. And so what we do now is with everybody, all the cooperators in the state driving people to NHBugs, and that would be ourselves, it would be Division of Forest and Lands Forest Health Protection, it would be the Forest Service, USDA Plant Protection and Quarantine, as well as Cooperative Extension. We all drive people to that NHBug site that has a photo upload portal.
Oh.
And so now it centralizes where that information goes. And certainly when Emerald ash borer first raised its head in the state, there was a deluge of people sending in pictures and damage and insects. And it comes in, like I said, in cycles. You know, different times of year we see more or less. But I would say it's a pretty steady stream of folks that send us pictures.
Oh, that's awesome. Hey, Pira, I've got a caller with a question. Good morning, New Hampshire.
Okay.
Who's this? Where are you calling from?
Good morning. How are we doing? This is Paul. I'm sitting down with my cup of coffee watching the water on the lake over by Laconia.
Excellent. And you got a question for Pira?
Yeah, yes, I do. You were talking about the ticks, and I was curious. Is there a particular time of year, like a particular month or two, that the ticks are really, really tiny?
Yes, it is. And it's going to be kind of in the early to mid-summer when they're very, very small. Just based on their life cycle. And yes. It depends on the species of tick, yes.
Yeah, so in the heat of the summer, you're not trying to look for tiny little ones. They're the good size ones that are much easier to see.
In the later summer, they're going to be bigger.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, well, good. I appreciate that information very much. And keep up the good work, and have a great day.
Paul,
thank you, Paul.
Thank you so much, Paul.
Man, you know, we didn't get a chance to talk about, I think, a pretty bug,
yeah,
but miserable, spotted lantern flies.
Yeah, well, thanks for bringing that one up. It is pretty. We haven't found it in New Hampshire yet. We're on the lookout for it.
Yep.
It's going to be miserable, basically, for everybody, just because its feeding habits make it so that it feeds all the time. It's excreting all the time. There's sooty molds that grow on the excretia. It kind of congregates into big groups of insects. The real economic damage looks like it's to the wine grape industry. That's going to be a problem for the wine grape industry. It also looks like it can have some impacts on hops, as well as some other impacts just on overall plant health, but that in a lesser degree, it looks like, than on wine grapes and on hops.
Okay, beer and wine. Okay, great.
Okay. So drinkers, volunteer your time at the vineyards and at the hops place to keep an eye for spotted lantern flies.
Oh,
wow.
Hopefully not here in New Hampshire.
No, I'm looking at nhbugs.org. I'm looking for the bug of the month, but you don't have that feature yet. What are those stupid little crusty things that are on oak trees?
The crusty things that are on oak trees.
Yeah, on
I might
the branches.
Need a little bit more than that.
They're the little growths on branches. Are they wasp nests?
Oh, okay. So it's not a bug you're describing.
No, they're
a habitat, maybe?
Well, it's some kind of hard shell, I think it's some kind of wasp some parasitic wasp that has something on that grows little growth on a branch. Oh yeah, I see them all the time.
There are gall wasps, and they'll create a habitat for themselves by causing the plant to kind of grow a little bit differently, and then the wasp lives inside in a protected home inside of that gall that it creates. And there's lots of different kinds of gall wasps. You'll see them on different kinds of leaves and on limbs and things. So that might be what you're getting at. I often don't like to try to figure things out.
I mean gall wasp. I don't know what that is. Is that something that would sting me? I mean, that I want to give a wide berth to?
It wouldn't sting you.
The word wasp, hello. Yeah, probably.
Yeah, I know.
and probably you specifically.
I know, it always goes for the sweet things. Yeah, I know. Yeah, right.
Lots of different kinds of wasps, and not all of them are going to be dangerous to people or to sting people. In fact, there's a lot of them that are beneficial as well. They just have characteristics that are consistent with putting them into the wasp group.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if you are at home, you're working from home, or sorry to say, if you got furloughed, whatever, got a little time on your hands, go to nhbugs.org. You can be wicked smart.
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to be an expert like Pyrrha, but you will be able to differentiate between the emerald ash borer, the Asian longhorn beetle, the elongate hemlock scale, the red pine scale, spruce budworm, white pine blister rust, winter moth, gypsy moth, oak wilt, and jumping worms, and just all these things that are going on you've been oblivious to.
Or what the hell is that thing crawling up the curtain in my kitchen?
Well, there's that.
You know, you can figure that out, too.
Yeah. But your first place to start is nhbugs.org. So, well, you going to get any field work, or are you, like, inside now?
Today I'm probably going. I've got a meeting with the rest of my group after this call, just to see how things are going with them, and then I'll be calling around to different places where we want to put up traps this summer to look for some of these pests that we're looking for, and then I'll probably head out into the field and do some site survey.
Are you hanging those purple traps out anymore?
So we don't hang the purple traps anymore. That's They are going to go up. The folks that do still put up purple traps are the Division of Forests and Lands puts them up in areas where they think emerald ash borer is likely,
right,
but hasn't been found yet as a detection tool. And then the other group that's been putting up purple traps is UNH Cooperative Extension. The Extension foresters will also put up some purple traps in the various towns that they're working in.
And again, collecting data that can be advantageous to us.
Yes, exactly. At this point, there are a lot of towns that have detections of emerald ash borer, and any detection we have kind of just helps inform your friends and neighbors that if they have an ash tree that is a high-value tree to them, that it's probably time to start treating it with an insecticide in order to prolong the life or save that tree, depending on what is used and when it's applied.
Got it. All right. Well, look, we have chewed up our allotted time and then some, but we love having you on. I mean, we could just talk about bugs. Like, I hate bugs, but somehow having you on, it's like, oh, this is kind of cool.
It is.
So
cool.
It's all good. Is Morgan well?
Morgan is doing well. She's hanging in there. She's going out and doing some inspections where she can, and things are going well.
Good. Awesome. Well, give her our best, and please remember us to her. You stay healthy.
Will do. You do the same.
We will.
Yep.
We will.
And anything shakes, you know, pick up the phone. Anytime you need time, it's yours. You know that.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
Well, love having you on. Stay healthy, Pira. We'll talk to you later.
All right. Thanks. You take it easy.
All right.
Thanks, Pira.
Pira Siegert, the state entomologist, the bug chick.
It's awesome.
And, you know, I mean, wow. She's just a blast.
That's right.
And I hate bugs. But she loves them.
It's cool.
Like, okay.
NHBugs.org.
There you go. And you can learn all kinds of stuff. And they got pitches and everything.
It's making it easy.
Thank God for you. Yeah, for Kelly and I. It's Remedial Bug 101.
Hey,
840.
Since I've been on lockdown here, I've gone through 3 books. And you know how hard coloring is?
Yeah, I know.
Okay.
I know. We'll be back after this.